This episode in the life adventures of Buron Fitz shows a point of view changing with the years. Crime marches back. A day in February 1929, the day on which Fitz gloated over the conviction of his old friend and benefactor, District Attorney Asa Kise.
In battering down the Kise defense in his final personal argument, the merciless accuser, Buron Fitz, said,
I would rather live in a pauper's shack and eat crumbs than dwell in the Beverly Hills palace of the corrupt Asa Kise.
Fitz didn't like palaces built on corruption. He was just a simple lover of home, sweet home, be it ever so humble.
But later on, Buron got big ideas. He wanted to roam mid pleasures and palaces like Asa Kise. So,
after he got all messed up buying one orange grove with money and notes deviously traced to John P. Mills, millionaire playboy, against whom Fitz filed and then dismissed rape charges in the famous Love Mark case, Buron did not get discouraged but built his present home. It's a shame that none of the sightseeing buses and tours go the lower Foothill Boulevard road to Arcadia. The home of Buron Fitz is a sight. Asa Kise would turn green with envy. This palatial mansion, set deep in the orange trees with its sumptuous stables, huge barbecue picnic grounds, its lavish barroom, gold service, and artificially built waterfalls and streams where Fitz can go trout fishing between trips to his private bar.
No Tennessee fish fry was ever like this.
How about a personally conducted tour to the Arcadian palace of the mighty Buron? No prince in a fairy tale ever had more sumptuous layout. No Cinderella ever made a more miraculous rise to wealth and riches than Buron Fitz after he became district attorney.
After he denounced his former benefactor Asa Kise for corruption and cited as proof and evidence of that corruption the comparatively modest Beverly Hills mansion of Kise.
If Fitz saw corruption in Kai's ability to purchase a fine home on a few lots in Beverly Hills on his $12,000 salary, what shall we think of Buron Fitz, who has purchased not a city house and lot, but a baronial estate of many acres and two other orange groves, an estate on which Fitz, getting $9,000 salary, has lavished an estimated $250,000.
Uh-huh, and don't forget Fitz's disability pension from the government.
That's right. How can Fitz, who in 12 years has received a total income from taxpayers of between $100,000 and $150,000, maintain himself in the style of a millionaire, support a $250,000 estate, buy orange groves? We offer him time on this program to explain and use as a text his denunciation of his predecessor, Asa Kise, when Fitz said,
I would rather live in a pauper's shack than dwell in a Beverly Hills palace of the corrupt Asa Kise.
Continuing our tour of the Buron Fitz estate, we approach over Lower Foothill Boulevard. Come into the 30 or 40 acres before which hangs a sign, Rancho Santa Maria. This is Buron Fitz's humble home, where he eats crumbs. We turn in and approach the mansion along a 600-foot private drive of macadam driveway. What a magnificent sight as we approach the great veranda, probably 100 feet long. Note the magnificent stables on the right, the finest Palomino horse flesh that money can buy, all owned by that miracle man, Buron Fitz, who has enlarged and remodeled this estate again and again.
So this is the house that Fitz built. How many rooms in it?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 14 playrooms, a living room. Good heavens, what's that in all those bottles
well,
there, eh?
Can you beat that? Champagne, rare wines, liquors of all kinds and colors. Say, that must have cost a pretty penny. A swell private ballroom like that, but...
And look at this room, Ed. Must be the dining room. Are my eyes down? Look at that!
Gold! Gold! Buron must have struck a Klondike to get all those gold plates and dishes. A regular gold service set. 30 or 40 pieces. Gee willikins and all that beautiful crystal glassware. Say, is Fitz an English duke or something?
It certainly is a long way from the modest poverty of the little home where Fitz was born in that little town back in North Texas, What was the name of that place, Ed?
Belcherville.
And even after Fitz came to Los Angeles, he had to work nights to get an education. And then, all of a sudden, after about 3 years as district attorney, he began buying up orange groves. But let's look around some more. Now we come to the bedroom. Boy, what a room, all in gray. My, it looks like a funeral parlor.
No kidding, pretty nifty, all right. Mm. And all this antique furniture.
Look at that.
Everything in period style. Fitz never bought that stuff with buttons, I'll tell you. But the thing I want to see, Dad, is that backyard trout stream.
Yes.
Where Buron built his little waterfalls and goes trout fishing.
Say, I want to see that beautiful horse that stepped on Fitz's stomach. And that $15,000 jewel-studded silver-mounted saddle that the grateful Big Shots gave to Buron.
Why were they grateful?
Oh, just grateful, I guess. A lot of people, you know, are grateful for things that Buron Fitz didn't do to them. Remember how we told about Fitz when he first was elected denouncing Asa Kais for building such a big house and little salary? He didn't hesitate to insinuate that such evidence of wealth from unknown sources was a brand of corruption on Kais. He said so to the jury. But Buron Fitz had no sooner finished making that speech than he himself began giving immunity to the rich people charged with crime and prosecuting people at whom these very rich favorites pointed the fingers of suspicion.
Who, for instance?
Well, Ed, I suggest that the Los Angeles voters go back and read the names of prominent bankers, movie magnates, ex-judges, politicians, all these that were named in the Julian Petroleum usury charges, men who loaned money on short term for 167% interest. There were the bankers' pool in which all the members were bankers, the movie magnates' pool. Fitz's office went through the motions of prosecuting one group, just one group of alleged usurers, dallied around just as Kais had done, failed to bring up his chief witnesses against the big boys on the stock exchange and the brokers, then dismissed all the rest of the defendants.
Naturally, the rich men were grateful to Fitz. Did he begin buying his ranches and houses then?
Almost immediately. Remember the Mills case? A millionaire charged with rape? A $10,000 payment to Fitz, former investigator Wheeler? Evidence showing that the money in large part went directly to Fitz? Fitz's indictment for perjury? We heard there the story of how Fitz got his first, or was it his second, ranch out of the mouth of Fitz himself.
Oh, I see. Men become grateful to Fitz because they don't get prosecuted or slip out of indictments by dismissals and so forth.
Yes, indeed. Now, we've been through the house. Grand house, wasn't it, Ed? Boy, let's go outside.
Say, will you look at that garage? It looks like an airplane hangar.
Say, and look at all those fancy, shiny cars at his disposal. And I, look, some of them are county cars, I guess.
Dad, look at those stables over there and those horses. Did you ever in your life see such beautiful horses?
Say, those are those Buron Fitz famous Arab Palominos.
Yes, yes.
Beautiful horses. And Fitz says they were presents to him from the millionaire sportsman and oil man, and I see his name is Blue Pencil here.
Well, you don't say. They didn't cost Mr. Fitz a cent. Mr. Blue Pencil must have been very grateful to Fitz.
Yes, indeed. There was a sad and tragic automobile accident, too, which placed the rich Mr. Blue Pencil in the power of Buron Fitz.
Tell the story, can we, over the radio?
Well, we can at least, except for these very scattered blue pencil marks here.
Amen.
And I don't mean, of course, that we have to pass upon the merits of the accusations one way or another. But it certainly was bad taste for Buron Fitz to accept those horses from Mr. Blue Pencil under the circumstances. I'm told those horses are worth thousands of dollars.
Boy, they remind me of Ben-Hur's blooded chariot team.
The story was this. A stock salesman named Meyer was run down, killed, 1936, large automobile, allegedly driven by Blue Pencil, who was riding with his daughter, one of the prominent families of Santa Barbara and Flint Ridge, taken to the Wilshire police station, suspicion, negligent homicide. They hired a bunch of prominent lawyers, attorneys McCarthy and Judson.
Wasn't Judson one of the Fitz personal attorneys in his perjury trial?
I'm not sure, but he was the lawyer of record in that case, but I think he did some of the legal research in connection with it. Anyway, attorneys for Mr. Blue Pencil came into court with a writ of habeas corpus.
What's that?
Well, that means, in effect, that the district attorney is compelled to state the charges upon which Mr. Blue Pencil was held and justify the arrest. Instead of doing this, Buron Fitz conceded the writ. That is, he laid down on the case, much as he did in the Mills case, tactically admitted that Blue Pencil was withheld without reason, and Blue Pencil stepped out, went free, without Fitz ever forcing Blue Pencil to trial.
Suppose you or I had been driving the car and had killed a man. Would Fitz have conceded the writ of habeas corpus?
Boy, I hate to think of what might happen, and has happened, bless you, to those Fitz didn't like, who have been in such unfortunate situations, especially since the examining physician in this case, named Dr. Chance, pronounced that Mr. Blue Pencil had been drinking. But, of course, we do not presume to judge.
But we understand that a rich man like Mr. Blue Pencil would be very grateful to a poor prosecutor like Fitz. And so that is the story of those beautiful horses, eh?
Yes, and when he got the horses, Fitz apparently said to himself, "Now I need a saddle. A saddle with oomph.
Mm.
A jewel-studded, silver-mounted saddle. When I go riding, I want jewels and rubies in my saddle. I do."
My, he had big ideas, didn't he? Well, do they make saddles like that?
Yes, sir. Fitz had his eye on one. A $15,000 saddle, we are told. So beautiful that he just had to have it. But he didn't feel like paying for it, personally.
So he let it be known that he wanted a saddle and found a lot of grateful people to chip in. Sometimes he asked his deputies to take time out from enforcing the law to run into Hollywood and find grateful contributors. Eventually, the saddle was paid for.
And then Fitz got himself a wonderful cowboy suit, fancy boots, sombrero, chaps, and jingling silver spurs.
And did he wear a mask and use silver bullets in his gun and yell, "Hi-ho, Silver!" like the little boys playing the Lone Ranger?
Almost, Ed, when his wife would get all of her lady friends on the veranda, and there was a big picnic going on, suddenly there would be a yell, a clatter of pounding hoofs on the desert floor, and everybody would jump and say, "Oh!
Whoa! Look at Buron!"
And Buron would rein up his horse on his hind legs and say,
"Whoa!"
And all the ladies would cheer!
Whoa, for Buron!
As Fitz would dash off with
a hey and a ho and a hey, naughty no. Boy, I wish I could have seen him do that.
Not now. Fitz tried to stand on his head or something like that they used to do in the Buffalo Bill show. And he fell off and the horse stepped on his stomach.
Hmm.
And now he's almost a total disability. Again. Just before election, too. And he got another plaster cast picture in the newspapers.
Say, one of these days, Dad, I wish you could tell us the story about how Fitz broke his arm falling out of an orange tree. Was he really picking oranges?
Oh, that's what he said, but of course that's another story. Picking oranges hardly exciting enough for Fitz. Suppose we invite Buron to come on our radio and tell us about the time that he claims he fell off the ladder and broke his arm. I heard there's a gun butt mixed up in that, too.
Wouldn't surprise me to have Fitz turn up and say one of his pet private trout jumped out of the water and bit him. That would make a good fish story just before election, wouldn't it? By the way, Dad, how about Mr. and Mrs. Webster? Any news about them today?
Well, no, except that Fitz is still seeing red whenever you mention the name Webster. Maybe that's why he brought the old murder charge against a boy named Webster and then dragged in half of Hollywood big names for the additional publicity that he might get.
Perhaps Fitz will go up to one of his movie star witnesses and say,
"Do you know Mr. Webster?" And they will answer,
"Why, which Mr. Webster? The one under charges now, or the one who left his revolver under the pillow at the Algonquin Hotel in December 1937?
And Buron Fitz may shout,
"Objection! Irrelevant! Immaterial!
Cite him for contempt! Boil him in oil!" Well, Eddie, we've had a wonderful trip to the mansion of Buron Fitz. I think the Fitz trip should be on the regular itinerary of all the tourist buses. Fitz should charge 4 bits admission and advertise in the streetcars.
4 bits for the Fitz trips. You ain't seen nothing yet, folks. See the homes of the movie stars. See the Wrigley Mansion. See the City Hall. See Catalina. And then for desert, see the $250,000 estate. The manufactured trout stream. Special conventions invited. Ample accommodations at the Fitz barbecue pits. Loudspeakers for the parlor. Good service in the dining room. You'll lose your wits when you see how Fitz can live like a king on $9,000 a year.
And a disability bonus from Uncle Sam. And remember, John Dockwater's the man, and this program comes to you 4 convenient times daily.
9:30 in the morning, 5:30 around supper time, 7:15 in the evening, and 10:30 at night.